here to discuss all things NRL and anything sports related. Please give a warm Aussie g'day to the footy fanatic and America's own Corey Jackson in Outside the Sheds.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome back to Outside the Sheds. Shedheads, I sit here in my bunker in the state that I live in, which none of you really know. It's kind of like, where is Waldo, except for the fact that you know somewhere the Shed Adamus resides in America. Well, besides all that fun stuff, welcome to the show. I hope your week is going well. I hope you're energized and ready. That round two is a matter of hours away. We've got a big tussle at Suncorp that we're going to talk about a little bit in the near future. But it's an exciting time. I've got to tell you, I was so excited with the round one continuation that started this weekend. Besides the talk that we had of having an incredible time in Vegas with Mrs. Shed Adamus and myself as we took over the strip. Okay, maybe not. But still, we had an incredible time. And being able to watch the round continue back on home soil, back in Australia, back down under, it was a really good time. So let's go into these scores for the remainder of round one. And it started off with the Raiders and Knights in a rematch of the finals round where the Knights came all the way back and broke Sticky's heart. But the Raiders 28, Knights 12. I've got to admit that this game surprised me a little bit because, you know, if we remember how the season ended last year, the Knights went on a 10-game heater, and they rode it into the finals. That heater allowed Kalen Ponga to win the Dally M. So I think a lot of people, including myself, thought that the Knights were going to come out running. The halves combinations were together. Everybody was pretty much healthy. They thought it was going to be good, besides Brayley being out again in the nine. But Sticky, the interview before the game got me nervous because Ricky doesn't like to talk a lot before the matches. He likes to get it done, maybe smack Michael Ennis on the cheek a little bit and call him an idiot or whatever back in the day, which was just pure television gold. But it was kind of fat. It just really caught me off guard how much he really wanted to talk and how much he talked up his team. Almost in the fact of trying to make them feel confident about what they were going to bring to the table. But it worked. I'm saying, Canberra looked really good. And Jordan Rapinoe back at fullback, that guy, he has got, for the size that he is, and he's not a small, small man, but the heart and where he puts his body in that fullback position, it's fun to watch. And he's one of my most fun players to watch and analyze how he's going to play the game. And I really think the Raiders play better with him in the number one. But they get that. We got to see the wonderkind, Ethan Strange, who did a great cutout pass at one stage in the match, got himself a try as well. So you have to feel good if you're the Canberra Raiders going up to the Hunter and getting that victory. And again, I think that was kind of the defining moment of the round, because after that, including your Shed Adamus himself, the punters and the bettors got their rear ends handed to them because it was upset central this week in the NRL. Next, we went over to Auckland. We went over to watch the Warriors at Mount Smart. Sharks 16, Warriors 12. Another match I got wrong. And I got to admit, the game started out very well for the New Zealand Warriors. The Warriors looked really strong. And at one point, you would think that they were going to win that game maybe 40-6. That's how strong they were. Sean Johnson had the ball on a string with his kicking game. But the NRL is really funny, and a lot like a lot of sports. If you don't put a team away when you have a chance and you let them hang around, it's usually going to come back and bite you in the keister. And that's what happened to the Warriors. They let the Sharks hang around, and after halftime, the Sharks came out a different club. They were on a mission. And Nico Hines put his body on the line with some incredible tackling. The goal line defense was good. They came out of their end repeatedly. They came out of their end because the Warriors kept trapping them, but the Sharks just kept chugging. But a dominant second half led the Sharks to a really season-defining victory. And I know it's only round one, but I think that they're going to be able to draw off that the whole rest of the season. But Sharkies get it done, up Cronulla. Then we had the Panthers in the Storm. You know, word comes in pretty early on that Cameron Munster is still out with that groin injury that somehow he obtained in the shower. And I don't want to know how that happened, but that's me. But the Storm do it again. Bellyache. And we're going to talk about this a little bit in more detail here briefly. Bellyache leads the Storm 8-0, shutting out the Panthers. Not a great start for Penrith to start the season. World Cup challenge. They did not score any points in the second half, and now being shut out in another 80 minutes of ball. I don't want to say it's something to worry about, because I think it's going to take Penrith a few weeks to kind of get their mojo back. But, you know, it just, Bellyache stays again perfect in round one. So we're really going to touch on that in a little bit here. Bulldogs 8, Eels 26. Whew. And I'm sorry to say this, my Bankstown people, I don't see this getting any better. I think what Cameron Ciarrolo is doing in the halves, I don't think that Chad Hutchinson is a half. I think he's more of a 13. And I don't know why they're going with him over Toby Sexton. I would have Sexton back in the halves personally. But it looks like he's staying with Hutch. I call him Chutch. But anyway, he's staying with Hutchinson again this round. Josh Adokar going down with an injury for the Bulldogs. Thank gosh it wasn't a break. Some people thought that it was a break, but I think we're talking more of an AC joint situation. We know for sure he's not playing this coming round. But it just went bad for the Dogs. You know, they never really seemed like they were in the match, which they weren't. And as bad as they were, unfortunately for them, the Eels were playing top-notch football. I would say the only problem for Parramatta coming out of that match was Mitchell Moses' groin injury. And I was a little surprised that Mitchell Moses stayed in the game. I know they taped him up. We watched it in the sheds at halftime as they were putting a heavy tape job around his groin. Dylan Brown stepped up with an incredible kicking game. You know, the King Gutho is going to be King Gutho no matter what. But for a team that I have outside the eight, it makes you kind of go, because Parramatta looked really, really good. Yes, Tom, I just said it. The yellow and gold, the blue and gold, whatever, looked really, really strong. And I think a lot of pundits and a lot of people are a little bit second-guessing not having the Eels in their top eight if they didn't. But I think, again, leaving that match, I thought Parramatta is going to have an all right season. I just don't know if they're going to have a top eight season. But the Bulldogs, and then Cameron Ciarrolo coming out after the match, almost really positive, and he might be doing that as a spin to kind of not get down on his team already this early in the season. But for all the things he was talking positive about, I was kind of looking at him going, wow, all right, well, your team still got pretty much shellacked on the pitch today. And so anyway, to me, the Dogs are still right where the Dogs were. Thank gosh they might have a few places. You know, I know that Connor is back in for on the wing for Josh Adokar, playing his old team with the Sharks this week. But again, not a lot of positives coming out of that to me for Canterbury. So, Dragons 28, Titans 4. Wow. First off, it's so good to have Shane Flanagan back on sidelines as in the coaching role. It is kind of a little strange because he's left from the Sharks to become St. George's coach, and you know the rivalry between the two clubs. But, man, that team, to say that that's the same team that we've watched the last two seasons, don't ever try to tell me that coaching doesn't make a difference with players and belief doesn't come into that. Because for a while, we were just talking so badly about St. George. We were talking about, you know, how bad little Flano, how bad Kyle was in the halves, and, you know, the Bulldogs just couldn't find a place for him. And, you know, here's what I take away from that. St. George will not be partaking in the wooden spoon this year. And Shane Flanagan even said that in his press conference. All of you who predicted that we were going to be the bottom team, you're very, very wrong. And he kind of chuckled, almost like he knew the joke in the room and nobody else did. But for as good as St. George was, the Titans just, and I know Jaden Campbell is out in the fullback position and they're trying some different pairings and stuff, but I knew instantly when they said Kieran Foran wasn't playing, and I wish I'd have known that before I picked the match, but I instantly knew the Titans were not going to win that game. And that's kind of scary because Kieran Foran isn't a young gun. I'm saying Kieran Foran is in his early 30s, probably as healthy as Daly Cherry Evans, his old Habs partner, has stayed. Kieran is the opposite. Kieran Foran is almost held together with electrical tape, but he gets back up and he just plays the game strong. And so when you hear already in round one that Kieran Foran is not starting, it really makes you wonder and it really makes you concerned for the rest of the season how he's going to be. But again, for as exciting as the Dragons were, the Titans were a little disappointing. And in the final match of the round, Cowboys 43, Dolphins 18. The Cows' performance in this match, to me, they were the team of the round. They're one of the teams that I'm going to talk about here in a second in a little bit more detail from this round that was so impressive. Todd Payton, I don't know what he's been saying to them. I don't know what type of preseason they've had. But that team came out angry. And when I say angry, they weren't trying to get into fights or they weren't doing, you know, high contacts or anything like that. They played angry like they knew the skill level they had. They shouldn't have missed the finals last year. And even though they did that push late that almost got them into it, I think that this is a team that has a grudge on its shoulder. I think this is a team that has a point to prove. And I think that they are going to be dangerous. And a lot of people didn't pick them. You know your Shedadamas did to finish in the top eight. But they may finish even higher than what I had them. And I think I had them in sixth. So really, really impressive for the Cows. And I'm really excited about that team because they were fun to watch. And then the Dolphins. You know, I know that Wayne Bennett's trying to tinker and trying to get this club. You know, they've got Herbie Farnsworth and they've got some new additions that I think are going to do well for them. But I don't know. Like that team, for as much as Wayne had them ready to go in round one against the Roosters last year, and if you think about it, that match almost cost the Roosters a chance to play the finals. You know, at the end of the season last year, but that same strike wasn't there, and I know the Redcliffe fan base are so behind this team, but there was something just missing with them, and I don't know what it was, but that just was not the performance I was expecting for the Dolphins. I thought, like I picked, that the Cowboys were going to win that match, but I know Wayne is already starting to do some tinkering. He's already changing the halves. Sullivan's not in this round, so it's going to be interesting. I haven't given up on the old genius himself yet, Wayne Bennett, old Clint Eastwood. But I think there are some real serious situations that are going up with the Dolphins. But who knows? You know, this is only round one. And with it only being round one, the season isn't made or break with one victory or one loss yet. So, Shedheads, like I said, you probably already picked it up. The two teams that impressed me the most after this entire round is now finished, is St. George in North Queensland. And the thing that I think is so cool about this is these are two teams that did not make the top eight last year. But they've already given their fan bases a lot of hope and a lot of belief that 2024 is going to be totally different. And I want to start with the Red V because they came out fit and firing. And I know Shane Flanagan knows and he feels that a good side is a side that is going to be in the game late. And the only way you can be in the game and in the match late is being in incredible shape. And Flano has that team. And I always look at one player to know how he is and how the team is, and that is Jack Bird. And Jack Bird probably looked the fittest I've seen him in a long time. I know he's coming into the season pretty healthy, But Jack Bird looked fit. He looked like he was dialed in. I know that after he got up to the Broncos, he really had some second thoughts about leaving the Sharks the way that he did. I know money is always a big thing, and I know with his partner situation that was some of the determining factors. But Bird looks good. And as fit as he is, that told me a lot about how St. George was going and how Flanagan had them dialed in. And they looked fun. And it's been a long time since I've said a St. George club looked fun to watch. And they did. They looked great. And I was impressed by the halves combination with Ben Hunt and Kyle Flanagan. I think that Kyle Flanagan, playing underneath his father, has the potential to get back to where he was at. And that was, and a lot of people forget, the Roosters came hard for Kyle Flanagan to make him leave the Sharks. I'm saying they were throwing some money at him to come and be in their halves. And it just didn't work, you know, and it didn't work there. And then he went to the Dogs, and we know right now the Dogs can kill a career as bad as Kennel Cough can a real dog. So it just did not, none of the destinations really fit Kyle Flanagan. And then what do you have happen after that? You lose confidence. And you lose confidence. And he was very close, Shedheads. Kyle Flanagan was very close to head to England. And I think if his father does not get the St. George job, he probably does go over to England to play over there to try to resurrect his career like he sees a lot of players do nowadays. But scoring that try, the celebration of him kissing the symbol on his jersey, the logo, the team logo, I was really happy for the young man, because these last four seasons have been really, really tough on Kyle Flanagan, and that I think that he's persevered. I think he's going to be rewarded, and I think he's going to play with the freedom the rest of this season that's going to be rejuvenating to him. And I think it could buoy St. George to some pretty impressive things. And you've got a happy Ben Hunt. You know, this is also, Ben Hunt is a guy that wanted to leave to go back to Queensland. And now he's so excited about playing under Flano and the direction he thinks his club's going, you don't even talk about hearing him leave. So Kyle Flanagan, Ben Hunt, I think this halves pairing is going to be something special this season. Mark my words. And then finally, Tyrell Sloan. A guy who also is taking a little bit of hit back, because he came in with a lot of smoke behind him, right? A lot of people thought this guy was straight fire, and the fire turned into just a little puff of smoke at times. You'll never say that Tyrell Sloan right now is the greatest defensive fullback in the game, but what you saw with his three tries is that he is explosive, and if they can get this combination with the halves and him together, you've got a really dangerous spine. And I really think St. George is going to shock a lot of people. I'm not guaranteeing them a top eight finish, because I don't think any of us knew really how this was going to fit. I did have confidence again that Flano was going to turn him around, but it's going to be interesting. And I am really, they're going to be a team that I watch a lot of their matches, because I want to see what if that Flanagan magic has really got them where I think they're going to go. So, kudos to St. George. My other team, North Queensland, wow. Now, don't forget, and I will stress this again, your Shed Adamus did say that North Queensland was going to finish in the top eight, and they're going to. They're going to. But this team, to me, was the most dangerous side in round one. They played a fun style of football. They looked like they had business. And even though they were playing, you know, to beat a fellow Queensland rival club, they look like, yeah, okay, Dolphins, we're going to take care of you, but we got some real stuff that we've got coming down the horizon. Right now, I've got to tell you, Shedheads, North Queensland is the best team in Queensland right now. They're ahead of the Broncos. They're definitely ahead of the Dolphins. They just have that it right now. And as long as they stay healthy, they're going to be a dangerous club, pushing top four now instead of six like I had them. And the cool thing about this team is, from old veterans and Kyle Felt to the young guys, Zach Labatt, both these guys scored tries. But I think when you have a club that's really juggling its place and what it wants to do, the thing that you have to look is, you know, they're going to continue to go on and make things happen. And I think that when you have young blood and you have old blood and they come together and they're concise and they feed off of each other, I think that's when you know you've got something special. And for this young man, the move that Zach did running down the line, besides his two tries, but that flick dummy that he did, I don't know if I have not seen that. I know Benji's done some incredible things back in the day, but a flick dummy pass, and he sold everybody on it. And to have the brass cojones to pull that off in a young career like that, again, shows you that the team is playing with a lot of confidence. And, you know, I like I said, we remember how good this team was 2 years ago. And I think last season was a little bit of an aberration, that it was not, it was something that no one was expecting. But this is a team, again, that is going to be knocking on some pretty impressive things if they keep playing this way. And then again, the boot of Valentine Holmes was strike and right on. 7 for 7 for conversions. He's dialed in with this kicking game as well. North Queensland, to me, if you're buying stock, I'd buy a lot of them. I'd buy a lot. Now, going to the other impressive moment of the round, and that is Bellyache, Craig Bellamy. And a guy that's been around as long as Bellamy has, it's tough to continue to let your legacy continue to grow and to get stronger and to get better. But Craig Bellamy continues to lift the bar every year in some way. And he's done it again, because the Storm, without Cameron Munster, played the defending premiers in Penrith, a team that was hungry, a team that, you know, had the still bad taste in their mouth about the World Club Challenge and being robbed over in England. But to get your team up a little bit shorthanded and to win your 22nd consecutive round one victory, tell me, that's got to be one of the most impressive records in all of the NRL right now. 22 years in a row winning round one. And even though coaches will tell you and pundits will tell you that a round is a round, starting off with a victory and starting off the season on a positive note, you cannot weigh that. You can't really figure out how much it's really worth. Because it's for a coach to be able to come back into the sheds after a victory, even if he thinks you have to lift your game up, but to be able to come back into the sheds with a victory and with house money already in your pocket, you can now coach your team up even harder, but still be proud of them and give them a little bit of a pat in the back. But then still be, because everything that you've done in the offseason got played out on the field. So you're already looking at your coach like, okay, you've already led us to this. What else can you teach us? And that's what Bellyache's been able to play with for so long. For so long. And it's you know, he's one of the greatest coaches in the history of the game. And this record right now, there's none of the greats right now that have done what he's done with this round one consecutive victories record. It baffles me. It's almost making me tongue-tied right now just to think about it. Like, that's in all of sport, you tell me any team that's won 22 consecutive first round or first week games, and there's not many in any club, in any sport, teams that have done that. So kudos to Craig Bellamy. Bellyache, impressive, you know. And then you got to show out because the AFL wasn't even in Melbourne, so the crowd was on fire too. It was just a performance for the ages again for the Melbourne Storm. Now, on the downside of this, that 8-0 shutout for the Panthers, this is only the third time in 10 years this has happened to Penrith. And the crazy thing about it is all three of them have been at the hands of the Melbourne Storm. And to think that a team has that type of hoodoo on you, that they can keep a firing club like Penrith scoreless three times in a 10-year period of time, shows you a lot about the layout of the clubs and how one team just almost knows how to play another team. And I'm not concerned yet for the Penrith Panthers because I think they've been there. Okay, when you're three-time defending premiers, you're going to figure it out. You got probably the best half in the game in Nathan Cleary. Again, you're playing a little bit with house money, but how many times are you able to continue to lose top shelf players and then just kind of plug in replacements like that? And Penrith did something years ago where they said we're going to use our juniors and club system to continue to refeed our side. And I think that's come to show that that's probably the way that you should do it. Instead of going out and buying a bunch of hired guns, ask Manchester United how well that works. But going through your farm club system, going through the lower grades to continue to let those guys continue to play in a similar type of system and then bringing them up. So, you know, the loss of Crichton's going to be huge. Luai is here one more year. But it's hard for me to fathom that the Penrith Panthers are not going to get back. Now, it may take, again, like I said, till round three. They've got a big match coming up with the Battle of the West between a firing Parramatta side here this week. But again, I think Penrith is Penrith, and they'll get it together. They're going to use that moxie that they've picked up over the last few years, and they're going to come out of this with flying colors. I still have them as a top four club, but I think, again, they're going to have to learn of a different way to win again. Because right now, their offense is not, and it probably didn't help again. They ran into an incredible defensive side like the Melbourne Storm. So, but back to Melbourne, is there any reason for any of us to think that Bellyache is not going to take, if this is his last season, that this season is not going to be a special season again for Melbourne, that they're not going to be in the fight late? I probably picked them a lot lower than they're probably even going to finish. But again, Munster's going to be out again this round. A lot of people don't know the seriousness of the injury of his groin, but they say he's putting the work in. But even without him, they're still playing incredible football. So be expecting some pretty big things again from the Melbourne Storm. Now, as we go into the 40-20, kind of a slow... Okay, no, it wasn't. Not at all. Because everybody had been waiting for the story of the last 2 weeks in the NRL, and that is the whole racial incident. Ezra Mann, Spencer Lenu, what's going to happen? We know right before we went on air last week, Spencer Lenu came out. He admitted guilt. He copped a guilty verdict on himself, said that he did the things that he had been quoted as saying, that he did say the racial slur to Ezra Mann. And now everybody had been waiting, which the NRL has not done a lot wrong to start the season. You know, we know that Peter Vlandis and the boys are playing with house money right now because of Vegas and how well they pulled that off. But I think waiting as long as they did for the judiciary to come down with their sentencing for Spencer Lenu, I think they missed the boat there. But with that being said, we all know now 8 weeks is what Spencer Lenu is going to be out. It's an 8-week ban. And this is a real polarizing topic right now in the NRL. I did get tired of listening to a bunch of, how should I say this, pigmentedly challenged guys sitting around the table at Fox League talking how a player that does not look like them in pigment-wise is supposed to feel about being called a racial slur and how they're downplaying it and saying, well, the only one who didn't was Buzz. Buzz was the only one who I think hit it right on with a big ban, a big fine, and making him go to learn indigenous culture, putting him in a course, a class. because Spencer Lenu's coming out saying that he did not know that saying that slur to him was going to be so offensive. But let me ask you a question. If he didn't think it was going to be offensive, why did he say it to Ezra Mann with such vitriol? If he didn't think it was going to be offensive, why would he use that choice of word to say to Ezra Mann to get under his skin? So I'm calling a little bit of BS on Spencer Lenu's file, where he says he didn't know that it was a racial slur, because he knew it was enough of a slur that it was going to make Ezra Mann upset. So think about it that way. So even though you may come out and say, well, you know, like, I didn't know that it was offensive, you knew it was offensive enough because you used the word, right? You used the phrase to say that to him. And if it wasn't anything that was going to get him upset, he wouldn't have used it. He would use a different word or a different phrase. So I kind of call BS on Spencer Lenu a little bit. Maybe he didn't know the gravity of the phrase that he was using. But he knew enough, again, to use that terminology and that phrasing and that word to get Spencer Lenu upset, excuse me, to get Ezra Mann upset. So I don't buy that at all. But again, I don't want to listen to a bunch of pundits that don't look like and don't have any representation on their panel say how they think that the NRL has blown this out of proportion. One of you guys shouldn't even be on that set, but that's me, okay? That's my feeling, as you kind of downplay what right and wrong is. But then there's other people, you know, from JT, you know, Jonathan Thurston really thought that the NRL got it wrong. JT wanted a 12-week ban, and that's a lot, okay? That is really a lot. But my thing is this. You've got to be hard if you don't want anyone else to do it. You've got to be tough if you don't want anybody else to even think about using a word that might get somebody upset, besides calling them a knob or something like that, right? And so I don't mind Jonathan Thurston thinking 12 weeks. I'd have no problems if they would have given Spencer Lenu 12 weeks. Because if you want to really eradicate something out of the game, you've got to be beyond hard. But to me, if you were going to give 8 weeks, to me, you'd have to go 8 weeks plus a $75,000 to $100,000 fine and then sensitivity training. That's, to me, what you do. You hit players in the pocket. That's what affects players. So like somebody said, it affects their mortgage or how they're going to eat that week or those weeks. So NRL, I don't think you got it 100% wrong. But I do think that you could have really doubled down and made the world and everybody in Australia know this is no joke. This guy's losing half of the season or almost half of the season because of this. We don't play. But it's a lot better 8 weeks than giving him a smack on the wrist, like Paul Gallen getting a fine and some guys not even being, you know, having to miss anything because they couldn't get quote-unquote enough evidence. So it's not a full drop of the ball, and I think it is a tough penalty. I just think they could have really doubled down and done a couple other things to really make it hit home for Spencer Lenu. But one thing we could all be happy about is this is now a thing in the past. Spencer Lenu's going to miss the rematch between the Chooks and the Broncos. So there won't be all of that media there, except the media will be there because Spencer Lenu does say that he wants to apologize to Ezra Mann. So we'll see how that goes. But we could put a fork in this. This thing is done. It's come down from judiciary. So let's move on to just footy-related topics. Now, you know that this is a Tigers house at times, and we talk about the West Tigers. You know that this is a Tigers house and the fact that we're very happy the board has been moved on and that we think finally we can get the dust out and we can put a little oil on the Tin Man to get him some movement. But even without playing around, the spotlight is back on the West Tigers and on their head coach, Benji Marshall. And I think this is kind of crazy. Benji made a statement that he's not going to eat, breathe, and sleep NRL 24/7, and people are all up in arms. Benji said, I have a family to worry about too, and I'm not going to sacrifice all of my life towards the game, and that there can be a healthy balance between my assistant coaches, my coaching, and getting good leadership on my team. so I don't have to be there, you know, with my thumb on the tack every moment of the day. Now, the funny thing about this is we're going to know if this coaching philosophy by Benji is going to work or not. But we can't already start to criticize it when we haven't even seen how the Tigers are going to play round one. Everybody's going off of how bad the Tigers looked against St. George in the preseason match. But it's preseason. You know, there's sometimes, over here in America, there's sometimes teams have not won games for years in any of their preseason matches in the NFL. To me, preseason is cool because you can see guys that you're probably not going to see much the rest of the season. But besides that, it doesn't mean anything to me. It's especially in the NRL where it's such a physical game. There's no pads. And you know, you're already going to have guys picking up injuries after week one or after round one. So I don't really understand the harsh criticism before the guys even coached a match. But again, that is what Benji Marshall brings to the table. That's what the magnifying glass and what the West Tigers get for not making the finals since 2011 too. So Benji has no problem, quote unquote, being in the spotlight and for making tough calls and making calls that are kind of in your face. And he's already done it with the Tigers in his early coaching career, because he is not going with Aiden Caesar in the halves. He's going with young gun Lachlan Galvin to partner in the halves with another young halfback. So what Benji is going to do now, and, you know, he has to remember his career. You know, he was kind of 18, 17, 18 when he come out of schoolboys and then ran on the scene with the Tigers back in the early 2000s, right? So he has no problem putting a young man in that type of situation because he's been there before. It's going to be interesting because I was really looking forward to seeing Aiden Caesar with Sullivan in the halves, but I also trust Benji Marshall that he sees something. Now, a lot of people aren't also talking that Aiden Caesar's got a little bit of a hamstring situation right now too, and that the Tigers are going to nurse that, and that's why he's going to start from the bench. I know Aiden Caesar wishes he was starting the match because he's playing his old club with the Raiders. But that being said, I think it's a brass move by Benji. But again, I think what's exciting about it is Benji being Benji and not being afraid to make the tough call and to make the call that he feels is right. So, Tigers, no matter if you're two-time Wooden Spooners or not, you're under the spotlight again, and we'll see if Benji Marshall's new guru coaching philosophy is the new way coaches do it. So, good luck to the Tigers this week. I'm really looking forward to seeing them take on the Raiders to see which one of the young gun halves come through. And finally, in 40-20, kicking off of round two, a match that I always get excited about, Rabbitohs, Broncos, a lot of history there between the two clubs, a lot of things from Wayne Bennett to Adam Reynolds. These teams are kind of intertwined over the last 5 to 7 seasons for a lot of different reasons. It is at Suncorp. And I think the other thing that makes this match intriguing is that the two clubs kind of underperformed in Vegas. And I think it's also cool that all four teams in Vegas are going to be playing each other in round two, because the Roosters are playing Manly in their freaking tussle on Sunday. So, but this match is really interesting because one of these clubs is going to start the season 0-2. And we know how these fan bases are. And because the way these fan bases are, you want to know if there's going to be a sense of panic. And I don't think any of us really know. I know that Kevy's got a lot more house money than Cameron Seraldo does. Excuse me, that I apologize about that. Sorry, Cameron Seraldo, because you don't have to be a part of this. But he's got a lot more house money than the coaching staff for the Rabbitohs. So let's not forget that because of him going to the grand final last year. But it is going to be very, very interesting to see how this clubs do. And then we go back to the Adam Reynolds factor. We know that there is still a huge part of the fan base for South Sydney that wish that Reno was still in the Rabbitohs jersey. So to me, this all adds up to an incredible way to kick off round two. I'm excited about this match. I'm not excited this match starts at 4 a.m. my time, but I am excited that this is the match that's going to kick off round two, and I think it's going to give us a lot of talking points for next week's episode of the show and for just the NRL community. So let's get it going. I'm excited. Now, as we go into round two, we go into our picks. I know, Shedheads, I know the ball was dropped repeatedly. I did quite a few knock-ons for my picks last week, but I'm also happy that the punters also failed on their side too, that it wasn't just me that did bad picks. But as we go into, like I said, the start of round two with tonight's match between the Rabbitohs and the Broncos, I just think there's too much strike. I think that Brisbane is going to be ready. I think that with the injuries to Jai Arrow and some of the players still for South Sydney, that the Broncos are going to lift their game up, and I think that they're going to get the victory tonight against the Rabbitohs. Friday, we start off with the Bulldogs and the Sharks. I do not have any reason to think the Sharks have any type of strike that's going to worry. Excuse me, that the Bulldogs have any type of strike that are going to worry the Sharks. I'm taking the Sharks 100%. Eels versus Panthers. I think this could be possibly the match of the round. To me, it's between this and the Roosters and the Seagulls. But I am going to take the Penrith Panthers to bounce back and win the Battle of the West. I just think that they're too much of a team, the Panthers, to not score and for their offense not to really fire like it has for a game and a half now. So I'm taking the Panthers. And then finishing off Friday, we've got the Tigers versus the Raiders. This one really had me. I'm still kind of juggling this one because I think that Ricky's team, I think Canberra is going to be a lot better this week. Excuse me, this season, not this week, compared to what a lot of people thought they were going to be. But I think that I've got a surprise pick. This is my surprise pick of the round. I'm taking the Tigers for an upset down in the nation's capital. I've got the West Tigers beating the Raiders. Saturday, Warriors versus the Storm. I always love it when these two teams play. It's always a very, very physical match. But I'm going to go with the Warriors winning in Melbourne over the Storm. I think that we're finally going to see that loss in the halves of Cameron Munster really come in effect Melbourne. And I think that Sean Johnson and Adam Fanua Blake are going to come over the top and beat the Storm. And then finally on Saturday, Roosters and Seagulls. This match is going to be fun because these two teams are going to try to knock each other out. They're going to try to out-physical one another. And they're going to try to be the toughest kid on the block, right? And to me, when you have one side with Victor the Inflictor and a returning Jared Waria Hargraves, there's no way I'm not picking the Chooks. I got the Chooks. Yes, I've got the Dixie Chicks over Manly. No, the Chooks, the Roosters, coming over the top of the Seagulls. And then we have the Dragons and the Dolphins finishing out round two. I know the Dolphins won a rebound match. I know they're back at Redcliffe for this match. But I'm going to go with the Dragons. For what I saw last week in round one, I really think the St. George has something to prove, and I think they're going to be in this for the long haul. And I've got Flano's boys coming over the top and beating the Dolphins up at Redcliffe. And now we're back. I told you it was going to be premiered again this week. We're not doing three. We're doing one. My gun of the round goes to Tyrell Sloan. Three tries, 104 running meters, two line breaks, four tackle breaks, and 11 tackles made. I really hope that Tyrell plays this way and with this type of fire and drive for the rest of the season, because if he does, that spine of St. George could make this club have a pretty incredible season, almost as incredible as their basketball club down there, who's one round away from making it to the grand final for that. But that's how we're finishing, Shedheads. I hope that your week has finished as strong. I hope you're ready for this weekend's NRL coverage. But until next week, stay dialed in. Treat somebody well. This is Corey Jackson, outside the sheds. Until next week, see ya.
And that was another fantastic episode of Outside the Sheds with Corey Jackson, talking all things NRL and all things sports. So please remember to smash the subscribe button and share this with your family and friends and show them what Australian sport is all about.